Welcome. Welcome to another wonderful Culture of Comics podcast. This is Jason Frazier, your host for the evening. Along with me, as always, is my co-host, Stephen Heiner. Welcome, Stephen.
Thank you.
We have a big show today. Of course, it's been a big weekend. As many of you probably already know, The Man of Steel released in theaters this last Friday. And if you haven't seen it yet, you're going to hear some discussion about that towards the end of the show. I kind of can't wait to get to that part. So in honor of the movie coming out today, we're going to call today the Show of Steel. So we're going to put a lot of focus today on the Superman side of the DC Universe and talk about many of the characters on that side. We're going to do a little bit on Aquaman, a little bit on Flash as well. And we're also going to have a special segment today in which we're going to discuss the recently released Injustice Gods Among Us video game and, of course, the accompanying tie-in comic series. We're going to have a special guest join us for that at that point as well. So welcome if you're listening, and it has been a long week of vacation for both Stephen and I, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to try to do our best for you today, and we are going to get right into Superman, I believe. Are you ready to go, Mr. Stephen?
Yeah, long, hard week of vacation. You know, someone's got to do it.
Well, we got to go back to work soon, so you might as well enjoy the rest of this last day.
Right.
So starting off today, we are going to talk, of course, about the Superman family and series. And so I think I'd like to start off with, let's start off in what I would consider chronological order. Let's start off talking about Action Comics today. Action okay. Comics, for those who may or may not know, was in the New 52, at least originally, written by Grant Morrison, and who has written some very interesting books in the past. And I say interesting in a good way. They are, I've talked about before, so with some other writers who they have some very big ideas, very kind of super science or super science fiction ideas, and doesn't mind sharing them. And so we got what I found interesting was that DC decided to go with this in there for their what was almost their flagship New 52 book. You know, we got Justice League, and then the next week we had Action Comics, and it was such a different writer than you would expect. It wasn't the safe choice, I would say. Not because Grant Morrison is a bad writer. He's an excellent writer, but just because it's not something that you consider mainstream. At least I wouldn't think so. Do you agree with that, Stephen?
He
started us off with what I think Stephen referred to Action Comics as kind of like a year zero of the DC New 52, kind of before the beginning or right there at the very beginning. Justice League, of course, comes a little bit after. For those who don't know the Justice League, which is what we'll be talking about next week, or the next DC show, rather, pardon me, the Justice League issue once, it was 5 years in the past from where we're currently at in the DC universe. So it was kind of, here they were, here's how they got together, and actually comics takes place before that. And it shows us a Superman who is just moving into Metropolis, just kind of getting the feel for things. Didn't even have a traditional costume, right? He was wearing probably what we all wear from time to time, wearing the Superman T-shirt. I'm not sure where he got
Superman T-shirt. Superman T-shirt and jeans.
Yeah, seems very self-aware to me, and I liked it though. He had, of course, sported many different colors throughout that run, but he had some very, very big ideas, of course, starting out. And I don't know how to pronounce the name, but of course, we had a lot of talk around. What was it, Stephen? Fifth dimension kind of beings and stuff in the beginning there.
Yes.
Was that Mixel Picklick or whatever his name is? He wasn't the first, but he was there.
I think that was part of it. I think that they wanted to make it difficult for you to say.
That would mean
it would be a really scary. I mean, wow! I can't even pronounce it. He must be a really scary villain.
You know what's funny about that villain, though, and what's funny, and I know he wasn't necessarily the first, but he was one of the first villains to appear in that issue, in that series, rather, is that, as you said, he sounds terrifying, but when you see the visuals of a character like that, not so much. he's a 2-foot-tall, balding dude, and not quite so terrifying as you would think. Of course, he has immense power, so as we know, sometimes big things come in small packages. What did you think, and I know you at least you got through several of the first issues, Stephen. What did you think? What was your take on Action Comics coming from a new 52 perspective? What did you think of it?
Well, I mean, I think part of seeing it in the new 52 is to look at all of the baggage, is not the right word, I think, legacy and sort of honored background Action Comics comes from. For those who don't know, Action Comics was where Superman originally appeared in 1938, and they didn't know it at the time. Comic historians have now gone back and said that Action Comics number one was the beginning of the golden age of comic books. So when you're looking at Action Comics, you're talking about a book that started the golden age. That's how much history, legacy, tradition is behind this book. And so DC knew it had to pull out all the punches. Pull out all the stops. And I think just looking at the cover of Action Comics number one, to sort of prep myself for the show, I went back and looked at these covers, and just a really great cover. Superman is running, and as you say, not a really proper uniform, and he really has that sense of motion. And it's a great new Action Comics. I think the challenge with that, when you know, okay, this is Action Comics, it's going to be different from what was going on in the 90s, it's got Grant Morrison in it, there's a lot of excitement behind it. So when I got to Action, the new 52 Action Comics, I was really excited about it. And I will say, early on, I don't think I was really let down. I think that I loved seeing sort of the, and it's not quite the origin story of Superman, but early days of Superman. We're seeing that now in Batman 21, zero year, that we're not seeing the origin of Batman, but we're seeing the early days. And so that's what I've come to like about this book. And it's really interesting to see these early stories, because they're not as often explored as the status quo. Oh, yes, you know Superman, he's accepted, everybody loves him. This is back when people just didn't know who he was. And I think it's fascinating in that way.
I would agree. I think there's a lot of that, and a lot of that comes into play with the movie they just released. If people don't know how to react, people learn he's not quite human. He's something from another planet. And of course, Lex Luthor appears very early in Action Comics, and obviously doesn't know who this guy is. And Lex, we all know the story of Lex Luthor. So kind of a guy who's, I don't want to say the pinnacle of humanity, but kind of a guy who considers himself the pinnacle of humanity, trying to defend humanity. What he thinks he's doing, he says he's doing it to save humanity, but at the end of the day, he's just trying to prove to himself that he can, at least in my opinion. I like this, though. I mean, I like the early stuff, but I think I can sense where you're going, Stephen, with some of this, is that it begins to get, the story begins to lose itself a little bit in the beginning of Action Comics, at least, and that's where if that's where you're going, I would agree with you on that. You begin to get into some of the Superman army stuff, the anti-Superman army, rather. Some of the stuff that I think the tie-up of Grant Morrison's story left me just kind of scratching my head. Did I miss something? Did I miss an issue somewhere? I had to go through and go, like, no, I didn't. I guess I just didn't look deep enough. And that's the what I think is a trademark of Grant Morrison as a writer, is he, like I said, he has very, very large ideas. And sometimes that can go over people's heads. It's intimidating.
And it's interesting, in comic books, sometimes you can be a bit a victim of the emperor has no clothes syndrome, because you're thinking, this person's a really great writer, I've loved a lot of his other work, ergo, maybe sometimes when I'm not liking a storyline, maybe it's just me. I think I talked about this a little bit with Jeff Johns and his Green Lantern end. And I love Jeff Johns a lot. What he's done for the Green Lantern universe and character has been basically unparalleled. No one has developed a DC character more in over a 10-year time period than Jeff Johns did with Green Lantern. However, the last two story arcs, I actually stopped reading Green Lantern at the end of the penultimate story arc. I didn't know Jeff Johns was leaving us, but I said, I'm done with Green Lantern until they can stop this nonsense. Because sometimes maybe the big ideas, sometimes the writers get lost in them, and we have to be careful that, you know, we like the writers. Sometimes we think they can do no wrong, but they're like everyone else. They can make a mistake with a storyline, or they can try to take us someplace we really never wanted to go in the first place. And I think when you're talking about some of these big ideas from Grant Morrison, who, again, both you and I have known and loved his work in other mediums and other books, I just after the first story arc, I have not avidly, and we talked in the pre-show, I'm not pulling Action Comics right now. So I read the trade. I've read probably, you know, a good part of all the teen issues from, let's say, 13 through 18, 19, 20, but I got off the train when I stopped being able to follow the storyline without keeping notes.
Well, that's a valid, I'd say that's probably something that many readers have said as well. And I think you're right. I think sometimes writers we consider them so good and almost so infallible that we just think, well, maybe I'm wrong for not liking this. I need to keep trying harder. I need to try harder to do this. And you're right. It's a mindset where we have to accept that if you don't like it at the moment, maybe you jump on the next issue, you jump on the next story. For those who don't know, obviously, at this point, Grant Morrison has concluded his story on Action Comics, and now we're going into, I believe, Andy Diggle and artist, Tony Daniel, who I like his art quite a bit. I think Andy Diggle, I think he might be dropping off fairly soon, actually. I think I read somewhere in one of the various comic book websites that he might have left already, so he might have a 2 or 3 issue storyline and then off as a writer. So we can talk in another show about some of the what feels like the mishandling of their talent that DC can do sometimes. But I read the most recent issue of Action Comics today, actually, probably about an hour ago. I haven't been back home very long, so I had to get back to my comic store right away and pick up the new issue. What I thought was cool about this newest issue was I don't know for sure because I read most of the New 52, but I might have missed it. But I think what we saw in the issue, in the latest issue, was the first appearance in the New 52 of Lex Luthor's iconic armor, his green and purple battle armor, whatever you want to call it. They didn't necessarily call it that, but I think it was kind of cool to put that nod back in there. It feels like it feels like the New 52 is just kind of representing ideas we've already got. And I will say this about Grant Morrison's early Action run. That was very much not the case. This was a very, very unique story in the beginning, even through to the end. Very typical Grant Morrison, but not very typical Superman story. The artist who started off on Action Comics back in the early 52, Rex Morales, I quite liked his work. I like that quite a bit. I think him and Gary Frank are two of my favorite Superman artists across the board. Are you familiar with Gary Frank's work, Stephen? Have you seen some of his stuff?
No, I have not. I'm not recognizing the name.
If you haven't, you should take a look it up on the web, just search something like that. But I can tell you this: if you're a Christopher Reeve fan as Superman, he kind of it's very reminiscent of Christopher Reeve the way he draws him. Again, I like artists who are very clean but very detailed, and I think both these gentlemen, Rags Morales and Gary Frank, do a great job with Superman. There's an artist we're going to be talking about with the newest Superman book just a little later that I think is also just one of the best artists working right now. But Action Comics, again, let's just summarize it so we can keep us on track and we have to get into the rest of these Superman books, so to speak. Action Comics, if you're interested, the trade paperbacks for, the first two storylines are out, something along those lines. I believe the trades go up to at least 12 by now, if not a little higher. I think we're up to issue 20 if you're going real time with it. Interesting stories. If you want to see the beginning days of Superman and some of the strange stuff he's had to deal with, definitely check that out. If you're in it for the art, you're going to find, I think, across the board, it's been pretty fantastic. Now, going out away from Action Comics and into Superman's own book, titled, interestingly enough, Superman. I will tell you this, Steve. Superman, the book itself, I actually think at the end of the day, I enjoy that more than Action Comics. And I don't know if you've read Superman or are reading it, but it's definitely
same with Action Comics. I've read the first trade and I've read a lot of the teen, like 13 through 20 books before I got off that train as well.
Sure. I like that too. That's a little bit more of what I would consider the kind of classic Superman stories. You're getting it's him dealing with just giant threats throughout, and they actually all squeezed into a storyline not too long ago called Hell on Earth that was interesting as well. What I like about Action Comics and Superman, another thing that I like about both of those is the presentation of his new suit. It's not quite the spandex it was before. You know, I think that was a very cool idea for Superman, that essentially his suit is Kryptonian armor. And actually, I think it spreads out from a detachable, let's call it the House of El, symbol he puts on his chest, right? That's how I perceive it to work anyway. It kind of spreads out from that. Mm-hmm. It's like liquid metal almost. I think that's very cool because, you know, again, it's taking some things we know about Superman. He has to have a Superman suit, but it always seemed ridiculous to me always that he would have to be wearing that blue spandex under his suit all day long. So I like the idea that it's not necessarily all just right there. And so, again, that's something new that was presented from the Superman book as well. Another interesting difference with Superman that you see a bit more of this story in the Superman, the self-titled book, is that the relationship between Superman and Lois Lane is a bit different, right? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say different so much as it seems like they've gone away from this. It used to feel like an inevitable road that they were heading down where they were going to get together. Now it doesn't seem quite so sure. It seems like there's some attraction on Superman's part, most assuredly, but Lois is with somebody else. She's with another gentleman right now, and very interesting, very different takes on this because we also know that Superman is seeing somebody else currently in the New 52, and that's of course Wonder
not,
Woman.
Not according to Brian Azzarello.
Oh, really? Oh, that's true. You know, that's right, because he's got something going on with Orion with her over there. Something, maybe. I don't know. It's hard to say what's going on there. But I think the Superman book itself, it's very, very, I would say this, it's not near as complex or difficult to follow as Action Comics. It's a much simpler, easy to follow book overall. Essentially, it's Superman punching big giant robots and stuff like that. Now, he's fought some other villains. He's fought the Hell villain and currently fighting something called Hybrid in the current issues as well, and that's where you're going to want to go probably if you're looking for if you come hot off the movie and looking for some kind of Superman comics that can follow suit with the movie. There's another book that has just come out that you're going to see is probably a little more into your liking that we'll get into very shortly here. But Superman is Superman. You know, you're looking at these books. We can talk about it all day long, but you know what you're getting with Superman. Essentially. I think, Stephen, he is the one character we can talk about that we don't have to do too much talking about. People know, you know. it's one that we could just go on and on, but at least we're treading ground over and over again. And so I think we definitely want to touch on the fact that Action Comics, at least the initial run, has some very different takes, some very high concept stories. The Superman self-titled book, obviously a little bit more akin to what we've seen in the past from a Superman comic. There are some different ideas presented. Like I said, we just got to see Lex's new and improved Super Friends armor. That's what I'll call it because that's what it used to be in the cards. I think that's where it first appeared, as a matter of fact, I think. Super Friends, that green armor. That's pretty cool. But that's a little bit more of your straight Superman story. And that's really all you had to do. These two books were all you had for Superman for the longest time in the New 52. Well, now we know there's actually a new book. I think I'll save that one for last, just because that's a new book. This leads into something we're going to talk about a little later. I think we'll go into something that is a little different, and that's, of course, Superman's siblings. It's hard to describe what they are, but let's go talk over about Superboy. Now, Superboy, as it started out in the original DC universe before all the reboots, was essentially a book about Superman before he became Superman. I don't understand the difference because I guess the difference was he was younger because he still wore the same suit. It took place in Smallville. That was in the 70s, 60s, maybe even. In the 90s, we had a pretty big change from who Superboy was. It was no longer Kal-El, the Superman we know. It was something very different that came out of the Death of Superman story that many of you may remember, of course, from the early 90s, mid-90s. Superboy was a clone of Superman. Not only was he a clone of Superman, he was a clone of Superman and Lex Luthor, which I thought was a very cool little story. Now, if he just did not have that terrible haircut, I really could have got behind that character in the 90s. Just terrible. So the shaved sides, it was just awful. But he did redeem himself a little bit before the New 52 began. He became a cool character and worked with the Teen Titans and was very, very cool. I believe he was called Kal-El then. I don't know if he's still called Kal-El in the New 52. Now, in the current, in the New 52, the Superboy book is a little bit different because he does not necessarily interact with Superman very often at all. As a matter of fact, the story originally goes from the New 52 that he was created to kind of contain or defeat the laboratory's other experiments. The lab, of course, is called Nowhere. That's all abbreviated. I don't know what the abbreviations stand for. It seems very complex. Probably stands for Nowhere. It's like S.H.I.E.L.D. and everything else. Who knows what they all stand for. But he was made from Kryptonian DNA, obviously Superman, and human DNA. And I think they have not necessarily told us yet who Superboy's human side is from. There was some implications,
probably one or two issues.
It's probably from Talia
al Ghul. And we have to accept that the League of Shadows had something to do with this, which also means that Superboy is going to be killed off in a few more issues. So,
well, this is, you know, and we were talking again in the pre-show with Superboy. I don't have quite the same connection that I might have had with Damian Wayne. So I can tell you if that happened, I wouldn't be quite so, oh, that's sad. But it's an interesting read. It's very different. But they implied a couple issues back. I believe it was a couple issues back. Steve, it might have just been last issue before the one that came out this last week, that it might have even been Lois Lane. So very, very vague. I don't think they actually ever confirmed it for sure, but it could be Lois. So we might actually be seeing potentially the offspring, genetically at least, of Superman and Lois Lane. Does not have the same powers as Superman does. He has many of the same ones, but most of his powers come from telekinesis. So he doesn't have the inherent super strength flying stuff there. Most of that stuff he supplements or recreates through use of telekinesis, through clever little reuses of that. Now, Superboy is kind of been off in his own little world. Like I said, he does not seem to touch too much on what we consider the Superman universe. He kind of does his own thing. He works with the Teen Titans a little bit, and I think we'll talk a little bit about how that could be better for him just in a few minutes here, I think. But he was born a teenager, fights his way out of this laboratory, and the first several issues of the Superboy comic are him trying to understand who he is, why the lab that he was built from or made in is trying to catch him, and what they want from him as well. But he is a very different kind of, I shouldn't say different, he's just a moody teenage version of Superman currently. To me, this character, I admit that I read the books, and I said this in a previous show, sometimes I read the books out of a sense of loyalty, not because I'm like, I have to know where this goes next. I think the storyline that's leading up to currently, Superboy is working with Crypto, the Superdog, and Dr. Psycho, I believe Dr. Psycho, one of the older DC villains. Of course, he now is like he looks like a munchkin from Wizard of Oz, like a short little dude. So once again, a Mixopitlick syndrome, that's the right pronunciation, just a short little dude has crazy powers. But Stephen, I got to tell you, this book I read it because I kind of want to see where it's going. I'm not terribly excited month to month to read this book. And as someone who isn't reading it, me talking about it probably hasn't made you decide you want to read it. Because I just don't think I have the passion behind it that I have for Superman himself. I am a huge Superman fan, and maybe that's why I'm reading these books. But what is your take on what you know about Superboy? What do you think about his place, or should he have a place in the DC universe?
Again, to your point, I'm not compelled. You have to make me want to come to the book. And when you're trading on loyalty and then you take advantage of that loyalty by not delivering a good product, I think you have what you have with Superboy. I sort of made a resolution after the last DC show that I wasn't going to reference any other major comic book company, but there's another comic book company, name starts with an M, and they put out a book on a minor character that I, you know, was recommended to. It's probably either my favorite book or one of my three favorite books from that company, but they made a compelling story and drew me into it, and I started to really care about the character. So to relate it here to Superboy, if you're going to have a minor character, and very clearly Superboy is a minor character next to the sort of titan of Superman, you're going to have to write a compelling story. And if it's simply Teen Titans in your own book, then I don't see that as a really compelling story. Maybe do something similar to, you know, other books like this, the book I referenced, What Does Superboy Do When He's Not Being Part of the Teen Titans or He's Not Busy Being Superboy? That might be a compelling story, although I think you might just file that under the 90210 file. So I'm not particularly compelled to read it, and I think that that's the challenge. Is if someone who's predisposed to buy Superman titles because we like Superman, in fact, I think it's funny, I like Superman despite what DC is putting out currently for Superman. So my love for Superman is not tied to the books, whereas my, we talked in the last show about Batman family, my love for Batman is augmented by what DC is putting out for Batman. I appreciate, I talk about that character more, I think about that character more. And what's funny is, and again, against the backdrop of DC just putting out an amazing new Superman movie, to have the comics fall so short right now, not just with Superboy, but with Action Comics and Superman, it's a bit of a letdown. And Superboy is a bit of a letdown.
I could not have said it better, I don't believe, sir. I think Superboy, I don't think the writer probably knows where he wants to go, but it's just I don't see a reason to stay on that boat. So far, the character just doesn't catch me. Admittedly, he was better. He was more interesting before the New 52. So this is one character who probably didn't need a reboot, almost. He was more interesting and more relatable and human than he is now. And at this point, he seems just like a petulant child. And I don't want to read about a petulant, a whiny version of Superman, because that's not Superman to me. I have, as you said, I have my idealized version of that I've gathered from movies, previous Superman stories. And to me, this character, I just do not think he has a place in the current DC universe, or he hasn't found it yet. I'll be fair. He hasn't found it yet. The footing has just not been found. He's been scrambling since issue one, in my opinion. And it's just not coming together. Now, with that being said, the female version, Supergirl, of course, is a little more interesting. But then again, Supergirl to me has always been a little more interesting than Superboy. Supergirl, for those who do not know, is actually Superman's cousin, Kara Zor-El. She's had what I would consider probably one of the most complex and bizarre histories with the DC Universe prior to the New 52 relaunch. I think this is the character who probably needed the relaunch, because people are like, I don't know who I'm dealing with, what I'm dealing with. She's an alien. She's not Kryptonian. What is she? She, of course, was she had a very big moment in the mid-80s with the Crisis on Infinite Earths, the first reboot they did, in which, of course, her big moment was that she died. So I think it's indicative of her whole history. No one is, the things they can do with her, the best thing they ever did was kill her before then. And then after that, in the 90s, it was even more confusing. The storylines, I don't think I could even begin to properly summarize that for anybody who didn't read it before, but I'll tell you this, in the New 52, she is more directed, and I think that's interesting. She is she is sent to the planet on the New 52 version, at least. She was sent in a pod by her father to planet Earth, but for some reason did not arrive when Kal-El did, and so when she gets there, from her perspective, the last thing she knew about Kal-El is she was babysitting him like a week ago. It's like, I knew him as a baby, and now all of a sudden there's this big dude coming up to me saying, hey, I'm your cousin, I guess. Hi. So from her perspective, she has a very she's very standoffish, just like Superboy is, but in a more understanding way, at least for me. She was taken off of what she knows and loves, and of course is Krypton, and she's thrown here, and everything's different. She has essentially lost years of what she thought was from what she knew before, and now she's stuck on Earth. And Supergirl, what I thought was interesting initially was, at least in that when they first presented her, was that she was actually more powerful than Superman. I think that's interesting. I think some people probably go, no one can be more powerful than Superman. I think it was interesting that she was actually a little stronger. a little more powerful and a little more wild. When she first hits, everyone's kind of panicking, at least in her book. Everyone's kind of panicking what to do with her because she is confused. She doesn't even speak English. She speaks Kryptonian, so she hits this planet incredibly confused. I don't know what to do. I'm panicking. You know, just people are lashing out at her. And she's discovering her powers on the fly. She hasn't grown up with them and learned them. All this stuff's developing as she hits the Earth's yellow sun, which is the power source for Superman and Supergirl's powers as well. So her path of destruction initially is interesting, and I thought I actually liked the book. I like the design for her new costume as well. I think that there's always complaints about Supergirl, and we talk about this from, it seems like every other show, we talk about sexism and how it applies in comics, and I think that they took her out of the short cheerleader outfit and put her into what seems to be a little more proper outfit for her. Of course, there's still the knee-high boots to work with, which so they still threw most of us a bone there. She actually has had some very interesting stories come up in her own book, and it was one very cool one, Stephen, in which she came across a grown-up version of herself. Interestingly enough, and actually that grown-up version of her ends up putting on the Power Girl costume, which I think any DC fan knows is a costume that doesn't have a symbol on the chest. It just has a hole cut out in the middle. It's like Cleavage Girl. So I don't know that it's actually what's going to happen, but they seem to be implying that maybe Supergirl, this version is kind of come out of nowhere, this growing up, I guess you could call her Superwoman almost, is going to be the Power Girl for the New 52. They're going to be the two of the same character, going to be two different characters in the new universe. She obviously had some big parts in the story, the Hell on Earth crossover, which was a big Superman family crossover in which, I don't know, was it ended up being a clone, I believe, right, Steven? Wasn't Hell a clone of some type? I think so.
Yes.
I don't remember. It's been a few months, but it was. She was very much entranced with him, and so she was kind of the bad guy in her own story, in her own book, and everywhere. She was kind of the person who wanted to destroy Earth, but it was out of sheer ignorance. Now, with that being said, Supergirl, I think, does have a place in the DC universe, more so than Superboy, because it does present. First of all, we need as many, I would argue, as many powerful female characters as you can get. But also it's an interesting take on someone who essentially is trying to learn and figure out who she is on this new planet versus who she knew she was before. Someone who all of a sudden is coming into these powers that Superman was kind of raised with and kind of grew into. She is thrown into the full brunt of this just incredible power. And I think it's interesting. It's actually her book. I actually do enjoy reading month to month. It's one that I probably would follow out of loyalty because I'm, like I said, just a crazy Superman fan. But I actually enjoy reading her book, and I don't try to rush through it like I do Superboy each month. And this is not one you read either, right, Stephen? Not yet, anyway?
No. Despite the fact that as a good-looking blonde character, I can't make comic book decisions that way, Jason.
No, you shouldn't.
It's tough enough making dating decisions that way. I certainly can't make comic book decisions that way.
Yeah, well, that's okay. That's all right. I do think that for those of you who are looking for something from if you have to go with a Superman from a teenage perspective book, this is the way to go. It is a little more interesting. It's got some pretty good art over month. She's dealt so far with several iconic characters. Like I said, Power Girl has shown up. The Silver Banshee. So Silver Banshee was, of course, the Superman villain in the pre-New 52 as well, but she's actually a good guy in the storyline. Kara Zor-El, Supergirl, a pretty doggone good book overall. I would say it does not rank high as Action Comics or Superman, but it's certainly worth a look if you're looking for something a little different but still want to stick with the Superman family. So we're getting close to getting into some Injustice here, but I want to take a few minutes to talk about the latest Superman book, which just came out this week and seems to be tailor-made to come out right around when the movie did. And for those who don't know, that book is Superman Unchained, written by Scott Snyder and with art by one of my favorite artists, Jim Lee. Just a fantastic artist overall. And Stephen, I'm going to let you take the lead on this one since you got to read it before I did. I've already read it, but you started it. You proceed, good sir.
Well, we talked a little bit in the pre-show about DC managing their talent. And you put Jim Lee and Scott Snyder on a book. And going back to Scott Snyder appearing at Comic-Con earlier this year, here in Kansas City, he alluded to this book. Someone had said, could you tell us a little bit about it? And all he said that I can remember from the panel was that I've always had one Superman story I've really wanted to tell. And that's why for our listeners, I told Jason that I think this was going to be a limited run book. I don't think they're going to announce it, you know, 8 out of 8 issues or however many, but I don't, I mean, obviously, as we know in the comic world, if it's, especially if it's DC, if it's successful, we'll just copy it or repeat it. And I hope, I could only hope that if this was a story that Scott Snyder wanted to tell, get a very long, very complicated, take it 50 issues story, that it gets told and closed. Superman Unchained is not a historical Superman book. I think that more than any other title at DC, this is something that should be respected. And when you do new things, you really need to be careful of that. We're not going to be talking about this show because it's a bit of a crossover, but there's a new Batman Superman comic coming out that's the reverse of, there was a 75-issue run of Superman / Batman. Well, this one's Batman / Superman. I'm interested to see whether they're going to take that who's first in the title, top billing, any further than that. But if you look at Superman Unchained, just a really great read. I would say, Jason Frazier, fun fold-out within the comic itself. Something, you know, that just reminds me, I showed it to my friend who reads all his comics digitally, which, again, for the record, are not comics. Sorry, if you read your comics digitally, all that is a placeholder for the real comics. Metaphysically, comics are printed on paper. That's the reality of things. So anyway, the real Superman Unchained, not the digital copy you people have who are reading it digitally, has this massive fold-out. And I'm thinking, really innovative and interesting and fun, and how do you do that in digital? You can't, people. Sorry. Go pick up the comic, go throw it down to $4.99 and see some of Jim Lee's amazing art, who I think Jim Lee's done the best Aquaman I've ever seen. He's done certainly a great Wonder Woman outside of Cliff Chang, and a really just great Justice League look. When I think of the Justice League right now, I think of Jim Lee's cover of the Justice League. And take that art, take Scott Snyder's storytelling, and you've got a hell of a story. And I'm not talking about that second-degree villain that we saw in Superman. I'm talking about a real foil for Superman, more so than Doomsday, as a villain. I'm fascinated by where we're going to go. I'm excited. It's the only Superman book I'm currently pulling. I'm giving Adventures of Superman a try, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I'm definitely going to be with this book for a while. If it measures up to where it is in issue number one, I'm excited.
Well, I agree wholeheartedly, and I'll say this. I think that fold-out is even Jeff Johns and his artist, Ivan Reiss, I believe, is doing it. Also, you know, they do fold-outs in Green Lantern, but this was even bigger than that. This is like a poster almost. It's pretty nice, and you can't go wrong with Jim Lee artwork. Just to kind of supplement with Stephen, having heard some of what Scott Snyder was sharing as well, but I'll just tell you that he intends it to be something along the lines of the Court of Owls. That what that was for Batman, that's what he wants this story to be for Superman. And I'll actually read you a quote that I had written down. I think, I don't know where I found it, but it is from Scott Snyder. So I'll just say, this is Scott Snyder's quote. I want to make sure I'm not stealing it from somebody. He says, I tried to take all of Superman's greatest strengths and turn them into a weakness, turn them kind of on their head and challenge them a little bit. There's new things that will surprise you. It has all the iconic moments you'd want, but it's still classic Superman, even though it's fresh and different. And I think if you heard nothing else out of, you know, what we talked about, that's probably the best way to summarize it. It's a very classic take on Superman. It's very, very it's Superman at its core. You know, Superman doesn't need necessarily complex stories to make it work because we've all grown up with this character. We all have special connections to this character. I think it's difficult to find a challenge for Superman sometimes because they've made him so powerful. But so that's because that's when you go to a character piece. That's when you go to something that's about the character himself and not his outside influences or his what he challenges him. And I do like the villain. I don't know what they're calling him yet. I think they just call him Superman. in this book, and you'd have to read to find out what we mean.
Because
I want you all. That's what we'll call him, the real Superman. And you need to read this book. It's something that you have a grand opportunity now to jump on to something fresh and new. It's the book just came out last Wednesday. It's time to if you enjoy the movie, which I don't know how you wouldn't, but if you enjoy the movie, then this is definitely where you want to start, because it has the same kind of ground level feel to it. You know, he's already established, but it seems like it's going places already. This book should be very interesting. It's touted as an ongoing, but as Stephen said, it may very well have an ending in the near future. Who knows? Hopefully not in the near future, because I'd like to see Jim Lee work on a book for a long time. I was sad to see him go off the Justice League, quite honestly. So a very, very good book overall. It suffers from first issue syndrome. I'll tell you that. There's just not much that can happen in a first issue. We see him doing some Superman duties and the reveal of the villain, but you kind of have to start somewhere, I think. At least in my opinion.
Agreed. Agreed.
Very good. Very good. Stephen, do we have our guests ready to go at this point? Are they called in yet?
Actually, are we all done? Are we all done with the Superman?
We could spend.
Did you want to talk about it? Adventures at all?
Let's go ahead and talk about adventures, and then we'll bring our guest on. Let's go ahead and do it that way. So, Stephen, you actually are the one. Just go ahead. I apologize.
No. Go ahead.
I'd like to have you talk about Adventures of Superman, because much like Legends of the Dark Knight, you, which by the way, I did pick up this week. So you've got me on that book now. You are the one reading this. I haven't started reading this stuff yet. So I'd like to have you kind of tell me about what the book's about and what you've experienced so far, because I'm always looking for new books, unfortunately. So I'd like to hear about it.
For those of you who didn't hear Jason and I's last DC show where we talked about Legends of the Dark Knight, Legends of the Dark Knight is a digital first comic, and DC sort of playing, and very cutting edge. I have to give it up to DC for doing this, taking a digital comic, proving it to be successful at first, and then printing it later. So Adventures of Superman, I think they're moving on this a lot further, faster than they did on Legends of the Dark Knight. And Adventures of Superman 1, you can pick up the local comic book shop. It's got three stories in it. And I think it satisfies for me, as I said before, since the two flagship Superman books are not doing it for me, to have an opportunity to do short stories of Superman the way that I already get from Legends of the Dark Knight is something I enjoy. First issue was decent. Again, what's Jason's point, first issue syndrome is a bit of a challenge. Adventures of Superman in the 90s was just a regular Superman title, so they're repurposing an old title for something else, which I'm fine with. Legends of the Dark Knight was the same. Legends of the Dark Knight in the 90s told sort of noir-ish Batman stories, and now it's a bunch of digital shorts. So I think it's playing to where we are in the comic zeitgeist, is that people like to see those short stories. It plays well in the digital space. And I like seeing it here. I don't think we always need the long form story. I think if you can tell a great story in a short format, then that's a great part of building out the character. It's much like we saw with, as I said, Legends of the Dark Knight. So I got the first issue. I'm on board. I'm looking forward to issue number 2 and 3 and 4. Again, they're already ahead digitally, so they're going to do this for a while, and I can only hope that that we can carry on with it.
So safe to say that it's something like a bite-sized Superman kind of thing, that much like the Dark Knight, kind of smaller stories, just kind of one and done.
Right, exactly. It's instead of a king-size crunch, it's fun-sized crunch.
And nothing wrong with fun-sized. So I think we'll go ahead and go into Injustice, but I will touch on the Smallville comic a little bit later. Just we'll kind of segue that into the movie as we go. But now we're going to move into an interesting series and video game. It's for those who are both gamers and comic book readers, kudos to you. It's hard to keep on both, but it's worth it, especially these days, because we had a great game come out fairly recently, released to the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, called Injustice: Gods Among Us. This evening, we'll be talking, of course, with I guess someone who has played both the game and read the accompanying series, and I think this person will have an interesting take as well. I have played the game and read the series. I think Stephen would like to if he hasn't already. And so let's get into that. Let's go ahead and get ready.
Thank you, Jason. Yeah, I wanted to bring in some reinforcements for the show. Jason produced today's show, and I thought, well, I haven't played the video game. I've got to call in reinforcements. So I reached out, and Tanner McBee will be joining us, and he's going to give some perspective, not just from the video game and comic perspective, but I think as a demographic that DC is trying to reach out to and capture. And interestingly enough, Tanner was with me and a friend at the Man of Steel screening, and he said that he came into comics through Injustice. And not to say he's never touched a comic book, but that he got really interested in this comic book. And I guess I would start, Tanner, by asking you, what do you like about the video game? What attracted you to it? Because I think I remember you telling me at the movie that you don't really even like fighting games, so it's not traditionally a game you would even be into. So what drew you to the game, and what do you like about it?
Well, I've always liked DC. I just never read the comics as a kid. But then I saw this, and I still play video games a lot. I'm like, this looks really cool. So I bought it, and it's a really great game. And,
What platform is it? Is it? And again, forgive me, I'm the non-gamer here in this discussion. Both you and Jason have consoles. Is it on all consoles? What console do you play it on? And for those who don't know video games, some of our listeners don't, tell them a little bit about the game.
I believe it's for Xbox, PS3, and Wii U, and I play it on Xbox.
Very right on. That's what I play it on too, Tanner. It's hard to beat it. Now, for those who don't know, it's a fighting game. What's interesting about it to me is that it's a fighting game that actually presents a very good story mode. And it's a very different story mode from what us comic book readers are used to. So what did you think about the storyline? Did you play through the storyline on the game, Tanner? And what did you think about it?
Yeah,
did you like it?
I finished the story. It was pretty awesome.
Good. Now, for those who don't know, I'll tell you what, Tanner, I will go through and I'll outline the story, and you fill in if you think I missed anything, okay?
Yeah.
So the storyline for this Injustice game is that is one that DC does very well. We've talked about it before, that they do alternate universes very well. This takes place in an alternate universe, and in this universe, and this is actually something you can read, and I'll talk with you in a minute about, Tanner. The Joker destroys Metropolis and tricks Superman into doing the unthinkable. He kills Lois Lane and his unborn son. So double whammy, right? It just takes out his whole world.
Yeah.
So Superman decides to take a hardline stance on everything. He decides that if we can't do it right, us humans are just too stupid to rule the planet ourselves, he's going to do it for us, and he's going to have help with the rest of his, anybody who joined him. And so the game takes place across alternate realities, but essentially Superman has taken over the world, and he essentially is ruling it in a very tyrannical, very, very, let's just call it mean, very mean fashion.
Yeah.
Tanner, what did you think? Now, you also read the comic book series, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about this? Does this change your view on Superman at all? Did you see that he would do that? Or what did you just think about it in general?
Well, I kind of like seeing Superman as a bad guy because we never really had that before. And since he's like one of the most powerful people ever, I think it's kind of a bad thing for other people. And I think it's pretty cool that there's like this crazy, powerful villain.
Oh, yeah, and it's a villain that we know.
Compelling.
Yeah, it's one we know and love, and to see him be so off kilter is polarizing. It's polarizing. I think it's tough to see, but it's also cool to see, because how do you stop somebody like that? He stops the people that nobody else can stop. Who stops him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What did you think now from the game perspective? I think I agree with you, Tanner. I'm not necessarily a fighting game fan. I play a few here and there. I played the last Mortal Kombat before this, and it played very similarly. Do you think it was a story that kept you playing through it, even though it was a fighting game, or what was it that kept you hooked throughout the game?
Well, I think I really wanted to know what happened in that game, and then I just played the story, and I thought it was an amazing story. And then I just keep on playing now because I've never played any of the Mortal Kombat games or any fighting games before, and I realize now that I like them.
Interesting. So it converted you. Very cool.
Yeah.
So what do you think? So the story mode is great. What do you do any of the other modes? Do you do the Star Labs, the challenge mode stuff in there?
I play the mobile app sometimes.
Oh, cool.
And I unlock stuff in the console from doing stuff in the mobile, and that's kind of keeping me occupied and playing multiplayer against some people.
Now the real question, Tanner, how good are you?
Well, I'm kind of a higher level in there, and I've mastered one character, Green Lantern, and I've only lost like a couple times, but it's pretty fun just beating people up.
You are absolutely correct. Now, I would not get along with you online because I can't stand fighting Green Lantern because I can't get around him. You'd probably whoop me pretty good. Now, Steven and Tanner have both read the tie-in comic book. Let's hear your thoughts about the tie-in, guys. What do you think about the tie-in comic book? Do you think it feeds the game well, or do you think it stands alone as a good story? What do you think about the tie-in?
I'll defer to Tanner first because I haven't played the game, so I'd be interested to hear Tanner's tie-in to the game, what he likes about it, because I can only talk about it from the comic perspective.
Well, okay, so the comic is from the beginning of where Superman, he's starting his reign on Earth, and then in the game, you start out in this first parallel universe other than the comic book, and then it's right before Joker is about to blow up Metropolis, but he didn't get Superman to kill Lois in it. He just has a remote, and he's going to blow it up with that. And then Wonder Woman, Aquaman, Green Arrow, and Green Lantern get teleported into the universe, which is probably like, they don't say, but like maybe 50 years after where we are in the comic. And Superman has everything like perfect, and the world is kind of destroyed, not destroyed, but like, I guess you could say bad peace. Just Superman is like the leader. And the group that got teleported finds Batman, which we know in the comic is against Superman, and he's getting other super people with him, and he has all of his team together, and they meet him, and Batman teleported them so they could defeat Superman. And then it plays out, and I don't really want to tell the ending, but,
Good. Cool. Steven, what do you think?
I really like it. Oddly enough, like Tanner, I don't know that I want to... Tanner was willing to admit it, I guess. As I'm hearing him, I guess I don't want to admit that the idea of Superman as bad is compelling. Maybe he's such a Boy Scout. You know, we think about... and Tanner, you may not have read, there's a graphic novel by Frank Miller called The Dark Knight Returns. And there is an allusion to that, that, you know, Superman's a Boy Scout. He just does whatever he's told. And I know you're a scout, so you can appreciate this. But I guess it's a Boy Scout gone bad. And I think that's compelling. I think that's interesting. I think it's worth watching, worth reading. And I like that DC's pulling off an alternate universe well. And I think that's what I enjoy about it. I think it's well written. I think it's well drawn. I'm very surprised. I'm just very pleasantly surprised. I immediately added it to my pull list. And I think in Tanner getting into the comic book, I alluded to this as I was introducing Tanner, that he is, I think, DC's key demographic. You heard him say that he plays the app. He started with the video game, and now he's getting into the comics. So Tanner, DC's got all their hooks into you, and you're totally fine with it. And along the key demographic, I think, and Tanner, correct me if you're wrong, if I'm wrong, did you just celebrate your 13th or your 14th birthday this last weekend?
13th.
So yeah, I think he's very much in this key demographic that DC's looking to pull in. And so then I guess the follow-up marketing question is, Tanner, do you see yourself getting into more DC stuff because of Injustice, or do you think for right now you're going to stay in the sort of Injustice space, like with the app, with the video game, with the comic? Or do you think now you're going to start maybe reading more comics? Because that's what DC wants you to say, but I'm interested to see whether that's actually what you're going to do.
I've been getting into DC a lot more. I've been reading a lot of the New 52.
What other New 52 have you been reading?
I read some of the Nightwing and the Justice League.
Okay. And you like that?
Yeah, I really like the Justice League ones.
I do too. I think it's fantastic. Cool. So I think, you know what I think is interesting about Injustice, and I think that Tanner has kind of alluded to that. And happy birthday, by the way. Belated, but happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
But I think Injustice, what's cool is that, and maybe surprising to some, is exactly what maybe even Steven was talking on a little bit, is that it's surprising to see who goes to the Superman side. They call it the regime in the game and then in the comic book. And it's essentially the loss of all freedom. It's essentially that group is the people who decide what we can do, what we can't do. And if we step over that line, they will not hesitate to end you pretty brutally. And I think Superman even killed a character. I don't know. I don't know how much we want to spoil, but maybe we can spoil a little bit. He actually kills a hero for disagreeing with him, and pretty brutally in the story in the game.
Yeah.
Burns holes through his head, so it's pretty brutal. But what I'm saying is that it's surprising to see who goes to that side, because on Superman's side, on the side who fight the regime, who want to control the world, Superman, who first, like you said, Steven, iconically not the person you think who would ever do something like that. But then you got Wonder Woman, you got Green Lantern on his side, and then you've got some who aren't quite surprising, Catwoman. I'm surprised he would tolerate villains on his side, I'll say that. And he's got Lex Luthor on his side, kind of, right? Kind of. There's a little twists around that. And so I guess Wonder Woman, you could argue, seems like the kind of person who might be okay with war in any way, any of its forms. Sometimes. She's pretty
that lady,
she's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
You know, whatever side's fighting the most, I want to be on. Aquaman's on his side. And essentially everybody. Superman has to pull out the street-level characters on his side. He doesn't really have the power, right? He doesn't have any power on his side. They're all essentially the people with no powers.
Just a couple people, like, kind of minor. That's why he had to bring in the people from the other universe, or the parallel universe.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting.
We got a question on Twitter here about, or a comment, I guess. How about those costumes and the skins in the game? And I guess I don't know what the skins are.
That's actually where I was going to be.
Those are pretty cool.
Yeah, and I was getting ready to ask Tanner about that actually, because that's another aspect that I like. They have released a season pass for the game, and what that means is that they're going to release four characters into the game. But along with that, they're putting out a lot of skins, a lot of different, and the skins, for those who aren't video game adepts, who don't speak the video game language, that's just different looks for each character, different costumes.
Yeah.
And
And
as Tanner was saying, you can play the Apple iPhone application of Injustice, which is free, by the way, I believe, and you can unlock costumes for the game. Some of those costumes are very cool.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I've unlocked pretty a lot of skins for the game, and they're really cool. They've brought the Blackest Night, where Super. They've only got three of them now, but it's Superman, The Flash, and Doomsday as zombies. It's really cool. And they have the new 52 costume for Batman, Wonder Woman, and Superman.
Mm-hmm. Did you get those costumes?
No, that's only in the, collector's edition, but yeah.
I was going to say, I want my Wonder Woman costume in New 52 because she's wearing, blue tights in the game and it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite costumes in the game? What do you think are some of the more – obviously the Blackest Knights are some of your favorites. So what do you think are some of the cooler ones you've seen?
Well, like you said about the new characters, they just brought in Scorpion from Mortal Kombat, I believe a week ago or so, and – he is really cool. They changed up his costume a little bit.
I guess they told him to get over here, huh?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was out yet. I bought the season pass, and I assume, so you must have as well. They put out, actually for new characters, they put out Batgirl and Lobo as well. And I thought both
Lobo.
Those characters are very cool additions. Yeah, Lobo is pretty wicked. I know that. So Stephen, for some of the other costumes they have, I think Superman has five costumes. By the way, he's got a Godfall costume and Red Sun. Bingo, Red Sun. Yeah, which is Stephen. If you haven't read the story, it's a story in which Superman lands in Soviet Russia, as opposed to the United States.
Really fun. I'm reading that right now.
Are you? That's a good story too. It's fun. Uh-oh, there I said it. What else have they got? Tanner, you can think of it. Oh, they have Flashpoint costumes.
Flashpoint. They have Aquaman, Wonder Woman, Batman, and there's one other, but I can't think of it.
Deathstroke. That's who it is.
Deathstroke.
Yeah, Deathstroke. Overall, I agree. Very, very cool costumes, very cool design. They seem to be catering to the fans a great deal with the game. I think we're going to wrap on the game for the moment, though. So, Tanner, any final thoughts about Injustice or anything else you want to tell those who may be listening about the game or the series?
Well, I guess if you want to know the ending to the comics in a parallel universe, I guess read or get Injustice and play the story. Pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's great advice.
Yep, it's a true word cannot be spoken. It is a very unique, interesting universe. I love the way it wraps up. I totally agree with Tanner on all of his points. Stephen, anything from you, sir, in regards to this?
Hi, Tanner, I appreciate you taking some of your Sunday to chat with us about the game and the comic book. Thanks for joining us.
No very much appreciated, sir. You take care.
Okay.
All right. Well, Stephen, I think I'm gonna do a little bit of talk around one other area of Superman before we get into the movie we all want to hear about, because I feel like you and I could probably make a show out of just the movie, but we're going to try and keep it short for everybody today.
I don't think we realized how much we were going to talk about Superman, because I think we're probably going to have to elbow aside Aquaman and Flash for today. I think we'll probably have to talk about it in another show, and this is just going to become the show of steel, as you said.
Well, that's okay. We keep a theme going here. We're going to be okay. For those who wanted to hear about Aquaman and Flash, we will get to those books. For the record, they're great books, and we will get to those very, very soon in the future. Let me just talk a little bit, because I'm a big, obviously I'm a big TV fan, about one other area of Superman, and then we'll get into the Man of Steel. And I want to talk a little bit about Smallville Season 11. For those who are not aware, Smallville was a television show on the WB or the CW, one of those channels, about this, about Superman growing up in Kansas. Very, very cool series. It actually lasted 10 years or 10 seasons, and it ended 2 years ago, I believe. And what they've done, what DC has decided to do after that point, is they've decided to continue the Smallville universe in comic book format. So currently DC is also putting out Smallville Season 11, which is another great Superman book. I will say this, it is a Superman book in which you probably have to have a little bit of knowledge about the series itself. And it was I actually own all the DVD collections of it, watch it any chance I get. It was a great series. It introduced introduced several of the cool DC characters onto your small screen. You know, some characters we haven't got to see in any live-action format yet. We got to, of course, see Superman. We got to see Supergirl, Green Arrow, Aquaman, Cyborg, The Flash, Darkseid, General Zod, Deathstroke, the Terminator. It was a very, very cool series, and I just want to touch on the fact that for those who were not aware, Smallville is, in fact, continuing on in a comic book form, and they've actually recently included Batman into the Smallville universe in a very different fashion, a very different design, I should say, very unique characters' designs. The storyline currently going on is a storyline in which Superman's in the future and dealing with a new Krypton. So for those who are interested in the Legion of Superheroes in the future, that's what's happening right now in the Smallville universe as well. And I think I just want to reiterate that I love the idea that the creators and publishers are taking the initiative, I would say, to continue series in different formats that somebody really has grown to love. I love Smallville. I love the new series. I think it's fantastic. And so I don't want to expand too much on that, because I know, Stephen, you did not get a chance. You have not watched Smallville before. And I should tell you that if you're a Superman fan, I don't know why you weren't. Stephen, I'm just saying, but
do I get to take credit for having watched all of the Lois and Clark episodes?
Absolutely, that was a valid show. I think that if you would talk to my wife, she would say that she wished that the actor and actress who played Superman and Lois Lane from that series, she wished they would do the movies. She likes them that much.
Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher. Yeah, they're a bit older now. Oh,
no, she means from Smallville. She means Tom Welling and Erica Durance, who is gorgeous, by the way. She was awesome as Lois Lane. Very snarky, very snappy. Just a great Lois Lane. Probably one of my favorite interpretations of Lois Lane. I would say my favorite, actually, interpretation of Lois Lane in any series. But with that being said, if you were a Smallville fan, if you go to your local comic book store, check it out. Their Smallville Season 11 is currently ongoing. With that being said, let's get into the meat of our show here. Obviously, we have a big, big – this has been looming over us the entire show. Been a huge weekend. The Man of Steel, the newest Superman movie, has released. Steven and I both, and I think on totally opposite states, attended a midnight release for this movie. Just could not wait. And if you follow our show at all, you know we talked about this last time, that this movie essentially was what hinged on if DC got a cinematic universe going or not. And so I want to talk about whether we think that was successful and where we think it would go from here. But first off, Stephen, let's talk about Man of Steel. What did you think about the movie?
I tend to think about movies differently when they make me want to write. And for some of our listeners may not know, in addition to hosting this podcast, which I hope it informs your comic life, I hope that it's a contribution. We know that you've got a lot of other choices of things you can listen to, and we hope that what Jason and I are trying to do in this show, which is not like many other, in fact, I don't think it's like any other comic book show podcast out there, what we're trying to do. And what I really enjoy, not just learning from Jason, but having these conversations, is I'm a writer. And sometimes when a movie makes me want to write, I know it's got a little something extra and special to it. I think coming into this movie, we have to manage our expectations a bit because the last Superman movie wasn't awesome. It wasn't horrible. A lot of people said it was horrible. I don't think it was horrible. It just wasn't awesome. And we had to manage our expectations going into Man of Steel because we knew that if this movie didn't go, that the Justice League movie was dead. Dead in the water. And for those of us who want to see a Justice League movie, who want to see that get pulled together, we had cautious optimism. I think that's what encapsulated it. And as I was watching the movie, even if I wasn't happy with it, totally, it still overshot those expectations, sort of like lowering your expectations before a big debate performance. And that's what I did here. I think my expectations were very reasonable. Man of Steel overshot them. And even though I don't think it's a perfect movie, I think it's a very well-done movie. And I think it's something Zack Snyder can be proud of. I think it's something Christopher Nolan can be proud of. I think it's something DC can be proud of. It's divided a lot of viewers. I will definitely get to talk about that. But I came away – let me back up. I watched Dark Knight Rises in a trilogy format. So the night that Dark Knight Rises was released, the local AMC showed Batman Begins, Dark Knight, and then Dark Knight Rises all with like a half-hour break in between. So I was totally in the mindset for that movie. And when we got to the final reveal in Dark Knight Rises, I gave a huge yell in the theater and started sort of a clapping frenzy. Well, I did it again at the end with Lois's last line to Clark, and I was afraid it was just a perfect ending. I gave the sort of war whoop. I was maybe the loudest person in the theater at that point, but very happy with it, Jason. And I know that I may not be as enthusiastic about it as you are, but I'm not going to run through faults here and there. I really enjoyed the movie. I wrote an article about it. And bring on the Justice League. That's all I've got to say.
I agree with almost everything you said, and I actually, you shared your article with me, and I really enjoyed that. You had some very good insights. I don't want to, like I said, I misquoted them as concerns. That's not, they're observations. And I think what's interesting is I went to see this movie with my wife, my brother-in-law in South Carolina this last weekend, and they came out with very much the same. So you're not alone in that. I don't think that. I think sometimes it's easy for me as being such a gigantic Superman fan to overlook those things and not try to explain them away, you know. With that being said, I do not want to scare anybody from watching this movie. This movie is I'll call it what it is. For me, it was a masterpiece. For me, I have not, and I have probably some very unpopular opinions amongst others, I'm sure, but I never really got into the Christopher Reeve Supermans. I tried. I bought the big old box set with the big silver cases, I just really, really tried. I wanted to like them so badly because I loved the characters so much. And I didn't hate them. I think that sometimes as we progress and new technologies arise and new ways of telling stories arise, sometimes there's a better way to tell the story. And I think in this case, Man of Steel really, really nailed it. They used some very good framing devices throughout. So this wasn't strictly an origin movie, which I love, Steve. I didn't want to have to go through, oh, gosh, the half the movie is him in Smallville, you know, that kind of thing again. They didn't really do that. You know, we had flashbacks throughout as he was traveling of his growing up. But I think this movie, for me, is, again, just my opinion, but the best Superman movie to date. It really, really nailed the character. I enjoyed the actor they chose. I think Henry Cavill did a great job as Superman overall. I think he brought a definitely a more – this is kind of sound goofy because the last Superman was very much a character piece, I think, almost to the point where it was somewhat depressing at certain points. But he brought a lot of humanity to Superman, and that's saying something because to me that's what's the most fascinating thing about Superman is the fact that he's not necessarily human, but he has so much humanity and so much hope, and that's actually a big theme of the movie. This movie for me – it had all the action you would want from a Superman movie. It had some great character moments throughout, of course, the death of Jonathan Kent. I don't know how much you want to spoil. I won't go too far into it. But how he deals with Zod in the end is something that must affect him traumatically. I think everything for this movie just fired on all cylinders. I walked out without a single concern. I walked out thinking this is what we needed to see to make Justice League happen. And I actually was reading an article, Stephen. I don't know if you get to see it this weekend, but apparently DC has gone ahead and greenlit a DC cinematic universe. So I think we're going to get what we want. I think that this is going well so far. I just really, really like the movie. I don't know how much. I guess I can go on and on and on about it. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about what we had concerns with or didn't here. But I'm just dumbfounded with it. I walked out just so impressed.
I think when you think about the DC Cinematic Universe, I think, frankly, DC, the animated universe, has been putting out decent movie after decent movie after decent movie. I've been very, very happy with those of you who haven't been following DC Animated Universe. They have a great Wonder Woman origin story out. They have some Green Lantern movies out. They put out All-Star Superman. They recently put Dark Knight Returns in two parts. Very well done. It just seems they can't quite get their act together on the movie screen, but Batman and this new Superman movie are really pulling that together and work from your strength, DC. So maybe get Batman, Superman up to full power, start to bring in Wonder Woman, maybe give Green Lantern another try, and then we've got to figure out how to do Aquaman and Flash. And don't know yet if we can pull off a standalone movie for those guys. But yeah, I think bring on the Justice League. I don't think we have to have a Wonder Woman movie in production in order to pull off a Justice League movie. But
you know what
I
think?
Whatever DC does here, it's going to be they have all of the lessons. Marvel is doing all of the heavy lifting for DC by having Avengers 2 and Guardians of the Galaxy will be out before a Justice League movie is ever shooting. So DC can thank Marvel for all of that research and that work, because DC can use that to say whether they're going to pivot and do something different, or they're simply going to follow a success formula. There's nothing wrong with following a success formula. I have no problem with DC doing that. If DC's got a chip on their shoulder that they've got to do something different from Marvel, I think that's a horrible mistake.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know what's interesting, though, Stephen, for me, as I think I'm maybe one of the few who I didn't walk away from Green Lantern hating it. I thought there's something worse than cheesy aspects
of it. I didn't hate it either. It just wasn't, I think, like Superman Returns, it wasn't up to the caliber of Man of Steel, Batman Begins, Dark Knight. And I think that's what people want these days. You've got to have a knockout, just lights out movie. The same thing happened with Zack Snyder's last superhero outing, Watchmen. I'm part of the group of people who really like Zack Snyder's Watchmen. And I'm in a minority because a bunch of people didn't like it. So, yes, I didn't dislike Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern. I didn't dislike Superman Returns, but they weren't good enough. And I think that that's a fair thing. I think you said the same thing about the Daredevil movie with the actor who I think, mm-hmm. until he recently did in Argo, that a substandard superhero movie used to be good enough, not anymore. And I'm happy to be there. I'm happy to be at that stage in comic book movie making where, I'm sorry, a B-plus just ain't good enough anymore.
Well, I think they're finally getting their act together in terms of picking the right talent behind the movie before it goes in. We obviously with Nolan can't do all the DC movies. I don't expect that to be the case. He didn't direct this one.
I think he's probably getting some stock in DC at this point. I mean that man, what he's done for DC. If they haven't made him an honorary shareholder, I think they're crazy.
Well, and that's why. And I know we tried to avoid saying the M word. That's why they did so well. They took such good talent behind the movie first. They picked the right talent to make it work. I think DC is really getting that together now. You know what I think DC's challenge is, Stephen, is, and this is maybe just, again, my opinion, they are working with characters who are more well-known than some of the Marvel characters. And so people expect more out of that. People know Batman. They know Superman. When thinking about the first comic movies we got from the other company, we got Iron Man, who was arguably a second-tier character at that point. The best they had was Spider-Man and X-Men. And those were doing well enough, but I think DC's characters are probably, they're so iconic that I think it's intimidating for anybody to try to approach that movie and make a good movie out of that. And obviously someone at the plate did that.
I think you touch on a really good point, and I think that that's the challenge and why I alluded to earlier that fans are so divided on this movie. How do you create a good movie from a character that's 75 years old, that has gone through a golden age, who started the golden age of comics, the Silver Age? And I alluded to earlier that a very interesting marketing move by DC, a lot of heavy-handed product placement, which I wasn't too pleased with, they used chapter one of Grant Morrison and Frank Whiteley's All-Star Superman as part of the marketing push. So they had their own free comic book day this last Wednesday, and you can find it there. I think you can find it at Sears, which I guess gets trashed in the movie as well.
Yes, it does.
But I don't know. Well, you know, I'd like to pay money so that our show can be, that our store can be trashed in your movie. Can we pay you millions of dollars to do that? Yeah, sure. So All-Star Superman, which, again, you talk about different incarnations of Superman. Well, it's a Silver Age Superman with no continuity in our current. What is DC doing there? They rolled out Superman Unchained. They rolled out Adventures of Superman a few weeks back, and now All-Star Superman. So I think they're looking at everything. They're saying maybe some people will start reading our graphic novels of Superman. Maybe some people will look at the short stories. Maybe some people will look at the new Superstar book with Scott Snyder. I think the one element that was missing there was the J. Michael Straczynski graphic novels, which I think were quite successful, not just, I think, financially, but I think critically, I enjoyed them quite a bit. And maybe pulling a chapter one from Earth One, Superman, J. Michael Straczynski's origin story, I think that would have been maybe one more thing I would have added to the marketing mix, but really smart. And it's I think, coincidental. I don't know that DC planned Injustice to dovetail with Man of Steel. But if they did, brilliant, but I don't think they did. So very smart tie-in and dovetail for DC with that. So, and I'll be fair, I beat up on DC quite a bit, and I think it's only because I want great things from them. And I have to say DC just got a number of things right, not just marketing and Man of Steel, but putting out the movie. I definitely want to get into some of Jason and I's, I don't want to say disagreements, but maybe differing points of view here. And I think I'm going to start with going back to what Jason brought up earlier about how do you make a Superman movie that satisfies everybody when everybody has their own image of Superman in their mind. And I want to start with, and again, I'm going to pause here. If you haven't watched the movie, A, you're crazy. It's Sunday of opening weekend. What have you been doing this weekend? Stop what you're doing. Go see the movie. Come back and listen to the podcast. At the end of the movie, we get a major, you could say, departure from canon. So let me make my first point. Cinematic universe is not part of canon. You can have a crazy, ridiculous Ben Kingsley Mandarin, and it doesn't violate the Mandarin from the comic books, okay? So door number one, cinematic universe, not the same thing as comic book universe, so don't get your panties in a twist over that. The second thing, which I've always had an issue with, not just with Superman, but with Batman, is this illogical inability to kill a villain. Because I guess I should start by saying, personally speaking, and this is the baggage I bring when I read a book, I believe in the death penalty. I believe that in a universe when someone cannot be trusted to live in society in peace, we're not obligated to pay for them to live for the rest of their life in quiet solitude and health. I think it's perfectly fine to end their life, not because we need vengeance, but because they've forfeited their right to live in a civilization. So there's no problem for me. I don't say, oh, well, you can beat them up all you want, just don't kill them. I have no problem with that. So in my universe, I've always had a quibble that Superman wouldn't kill people, especially if they can break out and kill more people again, I think a failure. I think that is, in its own way, injustice. I don't have a problem with that, but a lot of people are condemning this movie because they're like, that's not Superman. I'm like, no, that's not your Superman. Sorry. And it's cinematic universe anyway. Mm. Don't complain. It's not canon. So I guess I'll start with, you know, did it extremely bother you, Jason, as a Superman fan, someone who reads more super books than I do right now, that Superman killed somebody?
Well, it didn't. Now, I'm of the opinion that if there's any other option, Superman to me is who we all want to be. He's the ideal of what we all want to be good people. At least I believe that. Everybody wants to be good. Sometimes it's harder than it looks to be good. And so sometimes it's harder not to take that road and say, well, but at the end of the day, much like you're alluding to with the Joker side of things as well, so if we have someone like General Zod, who is exorbitantly powered, who in the space of a 30-minute movie has destroyed a city, two cities, let's argue, what do you do with him? You know, it's granted, there was the Phantom Zone ideas that worked well. He got rid of the Kryptonians, guys sending him back into the Phantom Zone, but that was no longer an option at that point. That's exhausted. What do you do with someone who so casually, in the space of a knockdown, drag-out fight, they would normally, you know, knock over a trash can in an alley, destroy a city? How do you – I don't think he had a choice. I don't think that – in this case, I think that was the – he was in, and for those who haven't seen it, obviously, like you said, you stop. If you're listening now, I'm ruining it for you. I'm sorry. He's about to kill more people. I assume he killed several with the way the city was getting destroyed already, but right in front of Superman, just burning to pieces with his heat vision. Superman has, and I think that was one of the themes of the movie, he doesn't have an allegiance to Krypton anymore. They, like you said, they had their chance. They failed. You know, they had the chance to be the best thing ever, and they blew it up just out of sheer arrogance. And so these people have a chance. These are good people inherently. They just need to be led. They just need to be shown the right way. And that's what Superman to me is. He's what we, even as a fictional character, he's an ideal that I try to live up to day by day, and I think many other people do as well. And I mean, that's why they're upset. It's like you can't ruin that ideal. But sometimes there's compromises you have to make in the face of the bigger question of what do you do with someone who could do something like that. So
you could use the Thor option and send Loki back to Asgard with Thor. I mean, man responsible for destroying New York. I mean, we could have sent Zod back to Asgard.
Well, that was exhausted, right? They didn't have the option anymore. He had used it, and so he didn't have a choice. And so I just believe that, unfortunately, Superman in this case just did not have a choice, and I think it was the only call he could make. I like that it's probably going to be a choice that haunts him. I assume that it would. I would hope it would haunt anybody. It was the right choice, and so I don't have a problem with it. I walked out of that thinking, I walked out of that with the mindset that, well, he had to do it. He had to save people, and that's what he does. The people Zod was trying to kill, were completely innocent. You know, they why should they die because he doesn't want to kill somebody? So my thoughts are, in certain cases, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, please.
I just think that you have to look at the greater good. Sometimes the greater good is a choice you wouldn't want to make yourself, but you make it for the greater good of those you're trying to protect. Now, of course, the question is going to come up for sure if anybody's listening, if they're writing questions and now anything like that, is saying, where does it stop? And that's a valid question. Where does it stop? But I don't think he had a choice in the movie. I think they lined it up well enough. If you felt bad about it, if you were upset that he did it, you have to look at the fact that he didn't have any other choice. There was nothing else he could have done.
I even think that they went out of their way in the plot in order to put us there, to make it look like he had no other choice. And again, as someone who is not against that concept in the first place, I don't care whether they need to set it up for me that way. And I say that despite the fact that I think Zod is a sympathetic villain here. I don't think he's, you know, we don't weep for Zod. We see this with Thanos Rising right now, that we're seeing a villain somewhat get some backstory on him as to why he got this way. And Zod gives a speech in which he says, look, I was genetically engineered to protect Krypton. Krypton's gone. This is what I'm doing. You're stopping me from doing what I'm programmed to do. And I think that that translates into a much bigger commentary on the tragedy of genetic engineering, somewhat along the lines of Gattaca. But you talk about just a fantastic race that was colonizing other planets, and then they decided to stop having babies. And I think that any civilization that stops having children is a civilization that has lost hope. And I think that that was the interesting story with S, what hope meant, that they were sending their natural-born baby out. Children are the fundamental expression of hope. There is no other symbol on planet Earth that means hope more than children. And I think that when you have a society that has lost sight of that, to where they're, nope, we're going to genetically engineer and we're going to do this, and we see this somewhat with China and their one-child policy, but in such a bigger scale with an interplanetary empire like Krypton, that, you know, that is hope. And again, Zod, why he's also sympathetic to me is he's also trying to take, he and Jor-El were trying to stop a government that didn't want to do anything. It was just happy to rest on its laurels. And do I blame? No, I would have probably joined Zod in a military coup if Jor-El wasn't a homie of mine that I was talking to. I would have been like, yeah, let's take over and kill these guys because they're idiots. Because they're leading Krypton to destruction. And I think if Jor-El and Zod could have found a way to work together, and that's, I suppose, always the brain trust and the military trying to work together, that's a hard thing. But if they could have found a way to work together, I think it would have been some good stuff. And Zod says, you know, I killed your father. I don't regret it. I would have done it again. And I got to admire Zod in a number of ways. He's doing what he was programmed to do. It's not an unnoble thing to try to defend your planet. It's not an unnoble thing to try to stop, you know, a stupid government from killing all your people. And you can see the genuine emotion in all of the followers of Zod as they're watching Krypton be destroyed. This isn't about glory for them. They're not trying to become rulers over everybody. They're just trying to preserve Krypton. And it is a bit one-dimensional in what Clark has, Kal-El has, that Michael Shannon. And I have to say, I love Michael Shannon. He does such a great job in Boardwalk Empire. And I was a little worried about him doing a superhero movie, and he killed it. Clark has had the benefit of living with the human. And so he has that other dimension. You can't blame Zod. He's been stuck out in the, you know, black hole somewhere, and he's just come out and he's trying to do this. So despite the fact that I find Zod a sympathetic villain for all of these reasons, I still have no problem with Superman executing him. None. And I'm just part of that group of people that doesn't have a problem with it.
I would have to agree all the way. Let me ask you a question. Mine may be a little more superficial than yours. What did you think about Lois Lane's did you feel that she needed to be in this movie in the way that she was? And I'll follow. Let me follow that up. Why I'm asking this question is I feel like Lois Lane is just as important to Superman as anything. But I felt like they included her in too much beyond what a simple reporter would be involved in. She's on the plane carrying the bomb. She's in the secret military bases. All of a sudden, she's got top level clearance. And I just thought. I appreciate the inclusion of Lois Lane, but it's like they tried to include her so much that it began to almost hurt it a little bit. It's like, why is she there? Why does she?
Okay, so my answer to that is she breaks the logjam in Superman's mind between the conflicting advice from Jor-El and Jonathan Kent. And that is, Jor-El, you will be a beacon of hope. Jonathan Kent, we're going to hide your beacon. where's the closest basket? And in fact, I'm going to let myself die to make sure that beacon is not discovered. And so Superman has divided loyalties. And that Lois Lane is there to help break that logjam and say, you're going to have to give it a shot. I'm sorry if you think that, I think she says, you're going to have to stop saving people, I think. She's like, well, I guess you're just going to have to stop saving people. So she calls him out and says, look, your wannabe anonymity, the Jonathan Kent solution, not a good idea. Maybe when you were a teenage kid so you didn't punch somebody's lights out, but you're older now, man, and the Earth needs you. So I think she maybe is a catalyst there. And to your point about, I would maybe make the same argument for Jor-El. I'm like, did I really expect to see so much Maximus in this movie? But I actually enjoyed it. So got to see a lot of Lois Lane in the movie and actually enjoyed it. And I had a friend or two who was concerned that Amy Adams wasn't going to pull it off. And I thought she's a great Lois.
I agree. Even though the Jor-El point is very valid, I just had to ask. I'm surprised you were not entertained. No, not that I tried to be hard on the joke. I think, you know what was interesting for me for this movie is they did a little bit of a switch off of what historically, or I say historically, for me has been the perception that Jonathan Kent was the warm and loving father and Jor-El was the cold father. And it switched it up quite a bit. Did you see the same kind of thing when you watched it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think some of the things that I read before I went to the movie, I read a review in one of the papers down there where I was at, and they said that Jonathan Kent made a very un-Jonathan Kent-like comment early in the movie, and I was waiting for it. I was like, what could it possibly be? And, you know, it comes across when Superman or Clark saves a bus full of kids and potentially exposes himself, and he says to his dad, who's yelling at him about it, what was I supposed to do, let him die? And he says, maybe. And that was pretty harsh from a Jonathan Kent who we've all kind of grown up with, seeing this ultimately what infuses Superman with what he wants, who he is. That's who
right.
makes him the good person that he is. Yeah, maybe let some kids die, you know, if you have to, just to protect yourself. I thought it was interesting. Now, I will say this. I like the difference. I like, because at the end of the day, some of the hard lessons that Jonathan Kent was trying to give to Clark were really not as hard as people, if you look at them just kind of from a shallow perspective, they seemed harsh, but the reasoning was there. But I do agree that Lois Lane was what needed to be bring him out to the public. But, you know, my point, though, is that after that, she's everywhere. She's on the ship. She's on the airplane. She's on the aircraft carrier. She's everywhere. But I do think, I will say this, I think Amy Adams did a great job. Again, I still prefer my Smallville Lois Lane, but I had no problems with her. I would be one who probably was not expecting much from her in that role, and she surprised me quite a bit because she was spunky, and she was obviously she's very pretty, and she just brought the right kind of attitude to it all. She was kind of like, I don't care what you say. Let me ask you this. Let me follow up that question with this question. What do you think about the change in the movie universe to Lois Lane knowing who Superman is from the very beginning almost? I think that was so logical it hurt, but that's just me.
Well, I mean, again, I mentioned this in the article that I wrote, but it's not believable that the Lois Lane investigative reporter, a friend of mine brought this up right away. He said, it's not believable that Lois Lane investigative reporter can't figure out, put the pieces together, and she did that, and you see it. She went and talked to people, and that's all that's ever going to happen is someone's going to answer questions, not like Superman has gone and killed off everybody that ever met him. So, yeah, it's very logical
right.
for me. And we hit this hammer pretty hard the last time when on our last DC show where I talked about, I'm sorry that Secret Identities don't do it for me anymore, either in comic books or in comic book adaptations in the movies. I just, it's not a big concern of mine. I don't care. And I think it's only logical, and I think it's where we need to be for that relationship to progress. I don't think it's believable that you're going to look at two people who want to spend the rest of their lives together with someone living a, I don't want to say living a lie, but it's humorously brought out some other times in some shorts on YouTube. But, so he reminds me all those times, and then the Clark Kent character's like, well, I wasn't exactly lying. Well, it's like, actually, you were. But it's always like some other way that he's saying, well, I didn't say that I wasn't there, Lois. And it's like, it's not believable that these two are going to have a real relationship without that level of trust. And I think you've got to put Lois Lane in that position. I think it's much less believable that with all of the video being shot, that people are going to think that because Clark has a new pair of Warby Parkers on, that he won't be recognized as Superman. I think that that's the much bigger leap of faith. I can believe that Lois Lane knows who Superman is. To think that no one else knows after, hey, he saved the planet multiple times, and assuming that everyone was watching, I think that's the bigger issue. So I mentioned this in my article. I hope that DC gets really risky in the next Superman movie and just gets rid of the whole super identity trope and deals with Superman in a comic book universe in which his identity is known, like Tony Stark. Because I think that that's a much more fascinating story than having to carry the burden yourself. And I'd love to see that.
I think small steps, Stephen. Let's not go crazy here. It's not like everybody knows. But I think the one person who has the single most consistent contact with Superman should know. Should have figured it out. And you're right. She's so smart, at least how she's portrayed in comic books and in the movies. It's just ridiculous to think that she can't figure out past a pair of glasses who she's talking to. But you're right. I think maybe that's why they took this approach with this movie, is that we're living in a different age than when Superman was first created. You know, it would have been believable back in the 40s that they didn't all see who, and they don't see Clark Kent out day to day. They don't know who he is. But now everybody's got a camera, a video camera, no less. You know, it's a world where there's not much secrets left at the end of the day. And I think they had to acknowledge that to some extent, and they did. I think they did a great job with that. What do you think? Now, this is. I walked out of that movie thinking it was very interesting. There were some Easter eggs throughout the movie. Of course, you saw a LexCorp truck get smashed. I don't know if you noticed, but the satellite that Zod and Superman were fighting on was a Wayne Tech satellite.
I did not see that. So very nice catch. Nicely spotted.
Yeah. So when you go and see it again, I know you will. Take a look out for that. But they're trying to invest. They're dipping their toes into it. This is not just a single Superman and nobody else. They're beginning there. I think they're going to be trying to follow the Dark Knight trilogy kind of methodology, in which we saw the first Batman Begins, we saw the villains were Ra's al Ghul and Scarecrow, and then the second movie is where we get that iconic villain. We get the and I think the second movie is going to have Lex Luthor in it. And I just feel like I know there's going to be a second movie. I'm getting ahead of myself there, but I feel like that. I think that would. They're just going on the same path again. And as you said, it's been successful for them with another franchise. But
well, you're right. Can I ask you what, again, let's stay on Christopher Nolan because I love him. Ask you about, if we're going to develop the trilogy, do you see what I see in terms of Christopher Nolan himself buying into the hope card? Because I think that this movie is definitely more hopeful in the cosmic sense than the Dark Knight movies. I felt the Dark Knight movies were always confined to Gotham City. It was always about Gotham City. It wasn't about the planet. It wasn't about the universe. And so do we see Christopher Nolan going through his own progression as a person? I mean, literally, this isn't made up. This isn't fictional. He's actually progressing as a director, as a creator, as a producer, where he maybe doesn't see things so darkly anymore. And I don't know too much about his personal life, so I don't know if he's had a child or what might have happened to him to make him look at things differently. But do you see a progression here with him, or am I just imagining that?
I'm hopeful for a progression. I think if you look at the Dark Knight trilogy, it's very gloomy overall. It's very centralized on, of course, its central character, of course, as well. But it is. It's not. I wouldn't say depressing, but it's dark. And obviously that has to be Batman's universe to an extent. The Superman's out there. He's out there, and you know, Batman's a knight, Superman's a sun. He's out there day to day. I think it has to be, and I hope that he continues on that path, because just the general feeling throughout the movie, the way some of the lines have delivered, it would give me chills because it was delivered so well and what I perceive Superman to be. I hope it keep going down that way, that path. I love the idea that S stands for hope. In my opinion, that's the truest thing out of the movie to me. That line really stood out for me, and the way he stands behind that and tries to embody that, I hope is a continuing factor. I feel like if we follow the trilogy rules, that the next one's going to be darker, but maybe it's something where we come back to that, you know, eventually. So I think I can't wait to see how they would cast with Lex Luthor. I can't wait to see how they decide to match the Joker casting from the last movie, the last trilogy they had. But I think it has to be Lex Luthor the next movie, and it has to keep the same idea up. Superman isn't Superman without that hope. It could be anybody else, you know. I think that's his key defining factor, is that humanity and that hopeful humanity that he brings to everything that he does. It's not like Batman. Batman sees the worst in people. Superman ideally sees the best.
When you look at Gene Hackman as like Lex Luthor's granddad or something, wouldn't that be cool?
I would like to see that. I think that'd be very cool. I just hope they don't cast Vin Diesel as Lex Luthor. I think that's a big misfire there. But either way they go, I think the hope theme really stood out to me, and there was other imagery as well that you mentioned in your article that came across, and it was, I wouldn't call it heavy-handed because others didn't notice. Others I was with didn't notice it, but I certainly noticed it, and I thought it was very interesting that they would present him as the way that Jor-El would describe him to his son is, you're going to have to be the symbol, you're going to have to be the person who helps them and guides them. And what imagery do we see throughout the movie? I mean, that's a whole other discussion, right?
Right.
It's interesting. It's very interesting. So. Again, for those who I think we're about to wrap it all up here, but because we could go on, there'll probably be some kind of Man of Steel show at some point in the future, I'm sure. Maybe on the Sister show at some point on the Swords in Space, I'll be doing one of those shows. But because you could talk about this movie, I think it has enough imagery and allusions and iconic things that happen throughout the movie or references that it could be a whole show in and of itself.
Big ideas, big themes.
It is, and it's delivered so well that it's hard, if you're really looking for it, if you're going to this movie ready to see it, just a fantastic Superman movie, it's hard to miss that, and it totally adds to the movie in every conceivable way, I think. So for again, just to wrap it up for everybody here today, Man of Steel, everything from a big time Superman fan, everything that I hoped it would be, just an amazing movie. Steven, your final thoughts on Man of Steel?
If you haven't seen it, go see it. If you've seen it already, go see it again and have a chance to unwrap all of the things that we had. Last time I did have, before, I don't want to be accused of just having been all fanboy about this movie. My main complaint, if it's even a complaint, my main observation was going a bit Michael Bay on some of the fight scenes. But even there, people have waited a long time to see this technology with Superman. We haven't really had a recent movie that could utilize some of that, and I appreciate that people wanted to get those CGI muscles flexed, and I'm okay with that. Personal taste on that. It's not a real quibble. I think it's just my own observation.
That's an interesting one, Stephen. I know I just said we're going to wrap it up, but I just want to touch on it for a second, because that was a complaint my wife raised as well, and I was literally just confused by the comment. It boggles my mind because, as you said, I've been waiting so long to see how this would work, and I don't see how a fight like that between Zod and Superman could go any other way. But the more I think about it, the more I can agree that it began to get so much about the destruction that it lost what we were really fighting about in the first place. So I agree with you in that. I think that it kind of began to overshadow what the point of all of it was. It's like, look at that toppling building. That one's cooler than the other one. So I just kept on going.
But you have to keep in mind, we've completely ignored the conspiracy theory that with Harry Lennox, who played Locke in The Matrix, and Lawrence Fishburne, who played Morpheus, and Christopher Nolan, who directed Inception, that maybe this was all just a dream, Jason. Imagine we're living a lie, Neo, and Superman has to take the red pill, ultimately.
I hope not, because it was a doggone good dream. I must say that. It's one I want to have again. It's one I want to own someday. It definitely was not a nightmare to me, so I think that's funny, though. very, very good observation. Overall, though, this is a fantastic movie. There are some things that might bother some longtime fans, maybe not. It's going to be, as we've said many times today, we all have our own Superman. But I think this is the best representative Superman movie I've seen in a while, ever for me, but for others maybe in a while. Anyway, let's go ahead and wrap it up, Mr. Steven. Let's talk about our next DC show, which what date is that going to be? Do you know off the top of your head? July?
We usually do our DC shows on the third Sunday, so it's going to be July the 21st. And again, apologize for those of you who are used to listening to us at noon central. Basically, I'm going to take the blame for it. My time management while I was out here in New York on a Sunday didn't go as well as I planned, so we had to delay the show till later. So the vast majority of our listeners listen to the show on podcast and are probably Monday morning listeners anyway, so it probably didn't bother too many of you, but those of you who do listen live, our apologies for moving the time on you, but as of right now, we don't have any plans to change the Culture of Comics regular showtime. I do want to give a shout-out to a couple new AMDG radio shows that just premiered since our last DC show. We have a show called Internet Marketing Insights on the network, and it talks about social media and the universe around marketing your business online. Definitely nerdy, definitely fits the whole Culture of Comics, Swords and Space AMDG theme. And also another show called Aspiring Entrepreneurs, which it interviews local Kansas City business owners about how they got their business started and what they're doing now. Maybe not as nerdy, but definitely informative. If you want to listen to those shows, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/AMDG and click the follow button, and you'll be emailed notices whenever those shows come out. Or if you listen to us on iTunes, those shows just will drop into your RSS feed when they come out. So give those shows a listen. Definitely appreciate they've I know at least one of those shows has given us a shout out. So we're on the network as well, and we want to give them a shout out. And I guess this will be it for us for June, right? Jason, we're going to return next month with our first Marvel show for the month.
Going to be some good stuff. We're sure going to miss y'all in the meantime, but it has been another excellent month. We had some very good discussions this month. I can feel the love from the other shows on the network. Thank you for giving us any kind of shout-out. Much appreciated. Our next DC show will be All Things Justice League. We're going to discuss Justice League, Justice League Dark, the Justice League of America. We're probably also going to hit on a couple people we missed today, Aquaman and The Flash, if you've got some time. We're doing that because going into the next month, the big DC storyline of the summer, the Trinity War, is beginning and encompassing all the Justice League books. So if you're a Justice League fan, be sure to listen in. If you're not, listen in and learn about it a little bit. We'll talk about what Justice League is and how cool it can be. And we talk a little bit about what we hope to see from the movie in the future. So today, Show of Steel. Next month, the Justice League show.
The Show of Justice,
so,
maybe.
The Justice Show. I don't know. We'll meet in the podcast of Justice. So again, thanks everybody for listening. You have been listening to Culture of Comics on the AMDG Radio Network. And as always, thank you very much for listening. This is Jason Frazier, your host, signing out. Steven?
Thanks for joining us, guys. And we'll leave you with the theme from. We started with the theme from the Richard Donner movie. We're going to end with the new Superman theme called Ideal of Hope from the new
Generations
Man of Steel movie. Yeah. All right. We'll see you next time.